Hello, everyone, wherever you may be listening. It's April 1st, Zayin Nisan, or Leches Nisan. A week from now, Baruch Hashem will be sitting around very, very different Seder tables, very different Seders, very different questions. And I want to talk a little bit tonight about listening. We do a lot of questions every year during the Pesach Seder. This year, some new questions we best not avoid. But why do people not listen? Sometimes there are events in life, we don't listen to people's input, we don't heed. Why are we intransigent? Why are we insensitive? Why are we indifferent? There's one thing that unites us wherever you may be listening to the shiurs, we're listening a lot better than we did in the past. First of all, the world's a lot more quiet, so it's easier to listen. We have more time. We have more quality time with our family, especially listening to people. We're less busy. We'll talk about that a little bit tonight. But more existentially, things happen, things occur, people give us input, events occur, we feel emotions. Somehow, it just doesn't filter down to our decisions, our behavior as best as it should, as often as it should. And of course, Paro becomes the role model, or the poster boy for this whole, because there's this whole sub-drama during the Yetzias Mitzrayim Exodus story about what's happening to his heart. Quite frankly, who cares? HaKadosh Baruch Hu could very easily flip the switch and take the Jews out. Why is there this battle or contest over the heart of Paro? Will he, won't he, strengthens his heart, stiffens his heart, heavies? Who cares? He's a pawn. Just get the Jewish people out. Makos and Moshe and negotiations. Just take them out. And yet the Torah, and we'll see tonight, takes us on this trail of the heart. And there are three different manners in which Paro blocks heart. We're talking about three different blockers, plugs. Now, what I won't talk about tonight, a little bit, maybe in the end, is, well, how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu strip free will from a person? That's a theological question. And there are many answers to that question. I don't even want to go there because it's an intriguing, very seductive sidebar. Take the whole shiur to discuss it. But let's assume for the meantime that theologically we can make sense of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu invades Paro's heart, assists, enables, catalyzes, whatever these processes are. What we're more interested tonight is what's happening. Morally, what's happening to Paro? Why doesn't he listen? It's pretty obvious. It's staring him right in the face. Each time you find some emotional refuge or emotional runaway safety valve to run to, as this teaches about ourselves and about our hearts. So again, there's a theological question about free will and divine intervention, not the subject tonight. Question is, aside from that, what's happening? What's happening to Paro's heart? And what happens to our heart? Maybe in a more nuanced, in a more subtle way, but nonetheless, we're learning about ourselves through the prism of this tragedy comedy about Paro. Okay, so let's get into it. Let's discuss Paro. Paro and his heart are described in three different terms. So there are three different terms that are going to brace tonight's conversation. The first term is koshi lev, person who has a heart that's kashe, kuf shin hey, just to show you on our source sheet, vani akshe is slave paro in blue, vani akshe is slave paro. Talk about that a little bit. The next one is not a lev kashe, but a lev chazak, vani achazek is slave paro, vani chazak. So it's a very, very different form of a heart turning into a non-listening heart. And a long way later, as you see, again, my internet connection is up and down today, so I apologize if it's a little bit unstable, but hopefully we'll make it through, is not a lev kasha or a lev chazak, but a lev kaved, kaved lev. I don't want to translate these terms because I don't want to give it away, but I just want you to know there are three terms and three parts it's a night shear. What happens when there's a leif kasher? What happens when there's a leif chazak? What happens when there's a leif kaved? What are the three different, call them syndromes, emotional blockers, plugs to our heart that block the messages that should be delivered from the heart to the mind to make decisions, to respond? What happens? So the first one, koshi leif, interestingly enough, is really a very tangential part of it, at least in the psukim. There's only one instance of it. Shemos Perek Zayin, very early. This is not Moshe's first appearance or first attempt. He's already visited Pyro's palace. He's already been scoffed at and mocked and tossed out and ridiculed by his own people. According to our Chazal, he actually runs home to Yisro's safe haven, his father-in-law's safe haven in Midian for a couple months. And now it's Parshas Va'era, and Hashem is restarting the process. And now Moshe legitimately could be cautious and hesitant. Why should I go? Paro won't buckle. Hashem says, don't worry. It's just beginning. Ani akshah slave Paro, v'herbeisius osasai v'smavsai v'eretz Mitzrayim. He won't listen to you, but ultimately I'll break. What's happening with a hard heart? What is the word kasheh means hard, rough, as opposed to rach, which is tender and feeling. Our heart is meant to feel and process. What is our heart meant to feel and process? Well, emotions, other people's emotions and other people's experiences. It's easier to sense other people's experiences. It's a lot harder to sense their emotions. Sympathy kicks in. You sense their emotions and feel the same. It's not just emotions, ours and others, but ideas. We hear ideas, moral ideas, ideas of principle, religious ideas, or general ideas. Ideas move us and we sense them and they make an imprint on us and they shape us. Events that happen, this event is affecting us, this pandemic. So the heart is the gateway for emotions, and typically the heart receives emotions, events, and there are responses which are triggered by the feelings of our heart, or at least metaphorically, with the feelings, heart-based or not, but so that's where we feel our heart moving. A hard heart, a leif kasher, is a heart which is anesthetized or numb, sensitive, and it doesn't feel. It's hard. We would say maybe Teflon. Ideas, events, emotions, glance off of it because it's so hard rather than absorbing and admitting. We don't sense other people suffering. We don't sense other people's emotions. We don't sense moral ideas. Paro exhibits a strong heart. Again, a Kadosh Baruch Hu assists this. That's not our conversation tonight. What part is Paro's, what part is a Kadosh Baruch Hu? But in Paro, the hardened heart is extreme, is radical. He doesn't sense the suffering he's imposing upon millions of people. And there's no moral conscience. When that combination exists, you don't sense insensitivity to suffering, as well as a deviance in moral judgment. That combination, insensitivity to suffering, deviance in moral judgment, that combination creates what we call psychopathic behavior. There's no conscience. Some people don't really have a moral compass, but they just feel naturally human suffering. And they can't tolerate it. Some people are a little bit insensitive to Muslim, but they've got a very, very righteous sense of what's right or wrong. At some point, there's a block or a deterrent to tyrannical persecution or manipulative, exploitative behavior. But when those two exist, you don't sense other people suffering, and you don't have any moral compass or conscience, then you become a psychopath. And Paro is, of course, a psychopath. He is willing to throw Egyptian kids into the Nile because at some point it gets to that. He is willing to sacrifice his own son the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, 15th of Nisan, when it's clear that the firstborn, including his successor, the prince, is in the crosshairs. He refuses. Hatred is so poisonous that it can evenly to psychopathic behavior, self-destructive behavior. I often think about the Germans in World War II fighting a vicious battle on two fronts, the Eastern Front, Stalingrad, the Western Front, France, Germany. And yet in the latter stages of this multi-pronged war, they're still diverting massive resources toward hunting solitary Jews hiding in lonely cellars in Hungary. What would have happened had the Germans redirected all those resources towards the actual war? I shudder to think, under natural circumstances, they may have triumphed. But the sapping and the diversion of resources, it just hated Jews so deeply that it became self-destructive, psychopathic. You don't think clearly. That's in a Mikalkelas Asashura. So this is a more extreme version of Pyro's insensitivity. What caused insensitivity? Did he not suffer in his life? Would he held himself higher than any moral system? We'll talk about that a little bit later. We don't really know. Now, interestingly enough, when the Rambam describes a Jewish king, one of the preconditions of a Jewish king, it's not that they can issue the test, but the goal, the Rambam talks about he shouldn't be married to too many women. So 18 is the limit. And on my... wait a minute, when I see that my internet connection is a little bit unstable, I'll wait a few seconds. I've got these 5-6 second pauses in my internet, so I'll just wait and repeat. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Melachim Perek Gimel, "V'chein lo yesh shatuf b'nashim." You shouldn't have too many wives. 18 is the limit, but the issue is not the number, but the message. Al hasaras libo ekpid atar. If he has too many wives, and his heart will be turned away from people's needs. The king isn't only a Talmud Chacham, isn't only a religion. He has to worry about the economy and public health and the war and the social fabric. So the king has to be sensitive to a degree. That's why Yehuda was chosen over Yosef, because Yehuda visits the dark side. He knows where failure is. He can commiserate. He can identify. He can rehabilitate people from their failures. Yosef is this purebred tzaddik who never sees or tastes massive decline the way Yehuda does in the story of Tamar. So Yehuda's chosen because he has to be in tune to people's day-to-day. He's a Baal Tshuva. And here's the money shot. Shelipahu leiv kol kehal Yisrael. The heart of the king has to essentially be a feeling, sensitive heart that senses. We call this, again, I said, for sympathy, or maybe even less so, empathy, commiseration, ability to sense other people's feelings and emotions and pay attention. Or probably one of the principal elements of EQ, of emotional intelligence. In Paro, we sense an extreme version of this deficiency, extreme vitamin deficiency. He really is a psychopath. None of us are Paros, but many of us have this condition in a more subtle fashion. What type of hard hearts do we develop, not biologically, but morally? So I think this is referring to people who are sensitive, who feel emotions of others, who feel ideas that are compelling. But what happens is we feel them, but we cordon off those feelings. We compartmentalize. We don't let those feelings suffuse us and drive us and determine our decisions. And we call this, in psychology, cognitive dissonance, where we know what's right, but somehow that knowledge of what's right doesn't affect our behavior. We create a dissonance from the issue. I use the word compartmentalization because that creates a visual where the different compartments of the heart, literally, and whatever suffering someone's feeling, but then you find a reason to walk away from it, not to intervene. You see an idea that should compel you, but you don't let it really touch your soul. I think it's becoming harder and harder with cognitive dissonance, because sometimes the way we succeed in cognitive dissonance is we run away from our identity just to the false robes of identity that we wear every day, our jobs and our positions and our title and our space. And everything's really shrinking. And we just have ourselves and our relationships, our nuclear relationships, and our it's becoming very, very hard to flee from ourselves, which... you can't use the word good and beneficial, but it's a side benefit of whatever horror we're facing. So, for example, the Torah's description of cognitive dissonance, person who lives a life of dissolute, promiscuity, wanton hedonism, hears the tochacha. Okay, we hear the tochacha, hopefully. We shudder, we're afraid, we realize how deep our fall could be. But this person doesn't want to. He wants to maintain his carefree life. So the Torah climbs into this person's psyche. It's fascinating. You don't have too many psukim at the Torah telling us how a human being will respond. You'll listen to this parsha. What will you do? You'll hit barich means reaffirm your own security. You'll say, shalom, Yeli. I'll be fine. This won't hit me. I'll follow my own arbitration, my own, hard to know what the word shrapnel means, guidance, authority. And we don't really know what he's telling himself. Why? Well, I mean, what do you mean? The Torah was just stipulated. It's you. It's your person. You're a Jew. You're subject. We just know where he's heading. We don't really know how he gets there. But here you see cognitive dissonance. It's true, but I feel it. Psychopath, completely insensitive, doesn't feel it at all. We feel, we sense, we absorb, but then we bifurcate, we distance ourselves from it. Interestingly enough, when Yechezkel describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu restoring a sensitive heart to us, very famous pasuk in Yechezkel, Yud Aleph, Beruach Chadasha Atein B'Kirbach, your spirit, we hope Hashem will renew humanity's spirit, I'll remove the stone heart. So here's another definition of an insensitive, non-feeling heart. In Parsha Shemos, in Sefer Shemos, it's aksheh, koshi lev, hard, stiff, insensitive, unabsorbing. Here it's more of a stone heart, but same idea. And I'll replace it with a feeling, fleshly heart, lev basar. So that's really our topic. He throws in a surprise. Hashem is not just promising us lev basar, v'natati lehem le'echad, one heart. Lev echad, one heart. That's the point. We can have a lev basar, but if our heart is still divided into compartments and rooms, then we're still not going to listen. We still have the cognitive dissonance. We still say, okay, I feel this, but it's not me. V'shirupli be'elech, it's someone else. So it's not just what you feel, but do you let yourself be driven and compelled by that feeling into change? Those are the ingredients of koshi lev. The first condition described, it's what afflicts Pyro. It's what afflicts us probably in Marseille. That's the first condition. The second condition is really the dominant one. Okay, just count how many psukim, more or less, speak of chazek lev, probably 15 or 16. I've added that, you look at the red, through all the vayechazek Hashem, vayechazek lev, vayechazekti lev, vayechazek Hashem, vayechazek, vayechazek. So this starts in Vayera and they're not in order, it starts in Shmos and basically concludes at the Yom Sof. We'll talk about the Yom Sof in a few moments. This is actually a little bit easier, it would seem, obvious to peg, but let's try to tease out or tweak out some of the nuances or some of the levels. Chazak doesn't mean hard, insensitive, callous. It means strong, chazak. A person is strong-hearted, that means they're confident. They're confident. They're arrogant, they're egotistical, the superiority complex, self-assured. Sensitivity or insensitivity, the first issue, has nothing to do with how you hold yourself. You can just be a person who's very under-accomplished, but just you're not a sensitive person. You don't have a sense of people's needs. You're not a sensitive. You're psychologically complex. The pathways between heart and mind and heart vision aren't really that well-oiled. They don't work that well. So the first issue of koshi lev with the sensitives is a little to do with your accomplishment. Second issue has a lot to do. People magnificent accomplishment, of significant accomplishment, let it get to themselves. And then their heart becomes too superior, too high, too strong, too proud. Proud heart, pride. And this is what we're seeing with Pyro, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, seeing him, of course. And Pyro's reason, as it were, to be prideful and arrogant, because he tyrannizes nations and he rules, reigns over the world superpower that fed an entire planet through 7 years. Imagine we're going through a few weeks of a plague. Imagine years and years and years of famine. Chassal. We shouldn't see it. We should realize it. Chassal. Pyro doesn't budge because he's too self-confident, which frames Yetzias Mitzrayim as a contest between the strongest human to ever live to that point and the Ribbono Shel Olam, in ways that we haven't seen yet. Because until this point, even though human beings had suffered divine wrath, divine punishment, it was always a hierarchical clarity that HaKadosh Baruch was in heaven and he's evicting Adam from Gan Eden, or punishing Cain, or flooding the world. No one's claiming they're stronger than HaKadosh Baruch. Here's the context. But I'm rejoining. Can I continue to share? Do you hear me?
Yeah, you just came back up. You dropped off.
Okay, fine. So I'll continue to share. So I'll share the file again. I apologize. Okay, here it is. Oh, Lebet Atlet. Wait a second, my internet connection is stable. I apologize for some reason. Very poor internet here. Why is this so? I don't know. I'm just going to take a second and open the door to my... Okay, now I see it's strong again. Okay, I apologize for having internet issues most of the day. So it's a parable to two athletes. One athlete who's weak, one athlete who's strong. And the stronger one overcomes the weaker one. So then we'll get back to this later in a moment. So this is really a contest between the strongest human being to ever live and the strongest authority, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why Vayechazak Eslei Paro dominates the Pesukim. This is really the main show. This is the central ring. And this is why, interestingly enough, you have to pay attention. I'm not going to read every one of these 14 or 13 Pesukim with you. But section 3, Kaved Lev, we'll see, that condition of a kaved is applied to both Pyro and to his countrymen. And we'll see later, even to chariots. But the term chazek is only applied to Pyro. Just read a couple. Pesukim chazek is the Pyro. Vechazek leiv Pyro. Vechazek leiv Pyro. Vechazek Hashem is leiv Pyro. Not to Budim. Not to the Egyptians. You have to trust me on this one. Leiv Pyro. Leiv Pyro. Vechazek leiv Pyro. Because no other Egyptian feels chozek leif. You may feel koshi leif, insensitive, you've deadened yourself to other people's suffering. No Egyptian is going to feel chozek leif, because that's unique to Pyro, the ruler, the emperor, the tyrant, the monarch. Interesting. And that's why the term Vayechazak Hashem is leif Pyro is not just the most ubiquitous, but it's the most long-lasting and enduring. Because now, look at the psukim, please. We're in the end of Bo, so basically all the fireworks have ended, we think. Okay, Vayechazek Hashem is Lev Paro, V'lo Shilach B'nei Yisrael Me'ar. So this occurs, I'm just highlighting it for you, right before Makas Bechoro. So this is the end. See source number here, this is the end. Hashem strengthens his heart, and then the Exodus happens. Yitzias Mitzrayim. Now it's Bishalach. And here is Bishalach. Three times in Bishalach, Bechazek Eslev Paro, Bechazek Eslev Paro, and in the end, Eslev Mitzrayim, the final time. Why is this term the only term to make it into Bishalach? Or why is this term so prominent? See, the other term is a little bit relevant to Bishalach also. Because Bishalach was the ultimate face-off of power and might. Chazal say that the 10 plagues, the 10 makos, should be seen metaphorically as a type of a war effort. And in war, first you withhold water from the town you lay siege to, and then you make noise all night to discombobulate them, to keep them up, to ruin their routines, so the frogs will croak. We don't appreciate how loud. The auditory aspect of Makos Tzvardea. I didn't really speak about it last week when I spoke about the Makos. And then you send in the archers, the chitzim, and then you send in the freaks, the giants, and the people with sledgehammers to kill, to rape, to burn, to pillage, and then you send in the boulders and the fire, and then finally, after you've weakened them, you send in the army, and roughly the Makos could be seen, Dom withholds water, Tzvardea, noise, Kenan, or Arab like the Pyrrhus. The skin, are over the freaks. Finally, the Arbe, which are uniform multitudes of non-discriminated, non-differentiated elements like an army. Arbe, Arbe. It was important for the Jews to see Hashem as a warrior because the original plan was for them to enter Eretz Canaan in a few months after Mitzrayim and wage war against 30-plus savage Canaanite kingdoms and have to trust that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows how to wage war. So the Makos were a metaphoric war to teach the Jewish people the confidence. Hashem Baruch was pretty good at war. He's a general. He knows what he's doing. But if the Makos and Mitzrayim were metaphoric war, well, the scene at the Yam Suf was real war. Steeds, chariots, spears, chasing. This was real war. And Chazal sensed this. Amar Ariyev, Erdov, Asig, Achale, Shal, Tameimar, Nafshi, Arichavi, Tarishemu, Yadi. In ancient war, part of the war were the enemies trying to psych out the opposition before the war through threats and promises. You've seen all the ancient war movies, the Bravehearts, which you gather in front, William Scott, gather in front of the ranks and you shout at your troops and you shout at the other side and you start hurling invective and screaming and shouting. Amar Oyev, Erdov, Asig, Achalek, Shal, I heard Paro screaming at them, I'll chase them, I'll reach them, I'll defeat them, and I'll share their loot. They heard Paro say this, and it comes up in their Shira. And witnessing the convincing triumph of the Yam Suf, the Jewish people say, Hashem, Ish Milchama, Hashem Shema. So they see real war. So the Yam Suf is really the climax of the Chozek Lev process of Paro being so proud of himself, so accomplished, so high and mighty, so successful. He was so successful, actually self-deified. If you look in Yechezkel, Parachaftes, Hashem here is warning Paro before Dam / Tzvardeh. I spoke about this a little bit last week, but as we came to the Shir. Hineni alecha paro melech mitzrayim matanim agadol. I'm upon you, paro melech mitzrayim, the big reptile. Harovetz b'tochi arav. You're crouching in your ar. Sher amar, and you're claiming liori vani asetini. I am the Nile. I am the reason we have such power and faculties and resources. I am it. Vani asetini. There was a blurring of identity between God and king, and the Nile was the source of such technological might and economic sturdiness, and Paro thought that it was him, and that's why he went to the Nile every morning for some ceremonial. So Moshe confronts him at the Nile, not only because Paro is trying to hide the fact that he's in the it's a religious moment at the Nile River. Moshe wants to debunk it, confronting it in the morning through several of the Makos, three of the Makos. So Paro's is very successful and very proud, very strong-willed. And Kodesh Baruch Hu is defeating him. But the point of it, pretty much returns to what I started the proceedings with, this the shiur with. Shinan's defeat is not enough to defeat the will, because the next person online will come who's stronger. Paro will be supplanted by Sancheirev. Was that all Paro? He's too weak. I'm more modern tyrant. Sancheirev will be replaced by Nebuchadnezzar. We'll laugh at Sancheirev, but I've got modern convention. And he'll be replaced by Ahasuerus and Amr. At a certain point, it's not just about quantitatively defeating the strength of your opponents, but the manipulation. Ultimately, it's the word Ches Zayin Kaf Kuf Chazak that essentially accelerates the redemption and the exodus. And Hashem is aware of this in the get-go. What does Hashem tell Moshe? This is very, very early. The parshas Va'ir, Vayam Hashem Amar Atatira Asher Asel LeParo. Ki biyad chazaka yishalchem uviyad chazaka yigarshem yatzmo. He's going to have a leiv chazak because of all his power and authority. You're going to see all that authority is going to be the engine that drives you out. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised, and so it was. Vatechazak stopped here before. Remember, I stopped here at the pasuk right before Makas Bechara. Now it's after Makas Becharas. Vatechazak Mitzrayim Malam Lemaher L'Sholcha Miharetz. Now the word chazak isn't the heart, it's the authority that led to the proud, arrogant, condescending, egotistical heart. Now it's that Smith, get out of my country. That was a double entendre. Bechozek yad, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's stronger hand, but also, of course, the strong hand of the Egyptians that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was wielding and manipulating and choreographing. This is the second condition. The first condition is, remember, the very beginning, koshi laid, insensitivity, inability to feel, in extreme versions, completely callous, in more subtle versions, cognitive dissonance. We feel, but we don't let it suffuse us or compel us. Chozek laid, which is too successful. We're not humble enough. Most of us have been in our homes for 3 weeks. We've had a lot of time to think about humility, a lot of time to think about the limits of human progress and human technology. I don't have to add anything to that, I'm sure. You've heard and thought, and I've written a lot about it in various venues, articles. So if anyone hasn't been thinking about that, please email me or WhatsApp. I'll be happy to share some of my own personal views. That's why humility is always such a cornerstone of growth, of listening to people. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva that if you're sone tochachos, if you hate input from people, you'll never change. You have to listen. A lot of self-arbitration in our world. A lot of people who feel they know what's right, or they felt they know what's right. And mirrors used to not work that way. People look in the mirror and see certain things, but run away from it. And I think mirrors are probably starting to work a lot better. Okay, which brings us to the third syndrome. Not pushy lave and not chozek lave, but kavod lave. I'm not going to give it away. What does it mean to be a kavod lave? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, kavod lave paro, v'achbed eslibo, v'achbed paro, sibo, purple, v'achbed lave paro, v'achbed libo, v'lave avadav, kini achbadeti eslibo. So let's discuss two issues. Chazal's understanding, a separate understanding, a complementary understanding. Chazal understood the word hichbadati eslibo from the word kaved. Kaved, kaf, bet, dalid, means a liver. When I get liver, kaved katsutz. You go into the story, you get kaved katsutz in Israel. So what happened? Mo hichbadati, here's the key medrash. Asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu eslibo ki kaved hazeh. Shem turned Paro's heart into a liver. Okay, so gives us a little bit more information, but we're still a little bit confused. Okay, so now we know that this second syndrome was because Paro's heart couldn't function as a heart, but was functioning as a liver, as a heart playing out of position, a heart trying to be a liver. The heart was liverized. So one of the major differences between the heart and the liver is how heavy the liver is. The liver is the heaviest organ. Why is the liver so heavy? For two related reasons. First of all, because the liver is fed by three suppliers, by an artery, by a vein, and by the bile system. So there's just a lot going through the liver. There's a lot of activity. There's a lot of food. The food is all going through the liver to be filtered, to be cleansed. There are three systems that are feeding or coursing through the liver. The heart is ventricles, arteries, it's compartmentalized. Additionally, the blood is pumped in and out of the heart, in, out, in, out, in, out, and sit there. Blood remains in the liver because the nutrients are there, and the liver is sifting and filtering. I think sharks have huge livers, so they can calibrate the relative weight of their liver to rise or sink based on their needs. The shark livers are nutritionally rich. So a heart is empty. A liver is full. When you convert a heart into a liver, you can't pay heed because your heart's just too full. Or in emotional terms or psychological terms, just too occupied, just too much going on, too much blood, food, nutrients, bile, too much, and that's for the liver, not for the heart. Heart should be empty. So why is Pyro's heart a liver? Because he's preoccupied. What's he preoccupied with? Well, the obvious thing is, he's just really busy. I don't know what you're preoccupied with, but man, am I busy. The really long days, to attend to my family's needs, try to shop, the amount of food we're consuming can feed the Russian army. We're just around, we're eating all day. Obviously, attend to our health and our needs, and of course, Talmidim and Shiurim, and I've never been more tired in my life. I hope that my heart is still open enough when I daven to try to clear my heart and during the time that I'm thinking about a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Pyrus is really, really busy. These makos, we read about them, we hear about them 3 weeks in advance. They happen in a year, and they're overwhelming, and there's recovery time, and there's warning, and there's emotional and angst investment. So, and certainly, we all follow the Pyro trail, and 3 weeks ago, we're all super busy, and the busier we are, or we were, the prouder we were. Pay homage to it. Like, I can't fit you in. It's just too busy in my schedule. A full schedule. We thought that was a testament to success, how busy we were, how preoccupied we were. We were all livered. But there's a different type of preoccupation, which I think is much more relevant to why we don't listen. We're preoccupied, and that's because we have so much going through our hearts. Feel like the liver, but tied by this emotional baggage. It shouldn't be, and it just weighs down, just sits on us and doesn't let real emotions, movement, change. It's just it's dominant jealousy and obsession, guilt, sadness. So much just stays. It's just hard to move it. We don't really see Pyro being jealous. We don't see him being obsessive, guilty. What we do see is we see him being very angry. It's a lot of anger. And that anger flares periodically. And Chazal, just trying to find it for a second, Chazal sends this anger para. Where is this? Unless this medrash. Yamdu v'yachis. No. The anger of a silly person is worse than both. So that's the pasuk in Mishlei that this marriage applies to Pyro. But you see a lot of anger. The anger gets in the way. Right? We're angry, and our anger is perpetuated. It sits on us as blood would sit in the liver and prevent it from movement, feeling. So the heart feels because it's empty. It's available. Liver isn't. So that's more or less Chazal's interpretation of Hichbadati Aslibo. But I think looking at the psukim is another complementary pshat that just leaves out of us. It's not hard to miss. Kaf bet dalid doesn't just mean a liver. It also means honor. kavod. And Paro doesn't listen because he honors himself too much. This is latent in a very interesting set of Psukim in Shmuel Aleph, where the Navi is berating the Jews, Vasitem Tzalmei Tcharechem, Tzalmei Achbarechem, Vinatatem Elohei Yisrael Kavod. And then you were hypocritical, you gave Kavod to Hashem, hoping that he would lessen your burden to other nations. So you gave Hashem Kavod, you gave yourself too much Kavod. You should have given more Kavod to Hashem than you gave to your hearts. Listen to this pasuk. V'lama techabedu et levavchem kasher kibdu Mitzrayim ufaro es libam. So this pasuk in Shmuel makes it pretty clear that kavod leiv paro is not liberizing, as Chazal interpreted. It's one shot, but the other shot is you just pay too much honor. And this is very different than what I talked about before. People of accomplishment feel obstinate and intransigent. I don't have to listen to anyone. And it's a little different. Honor is not obstinacy and intransigence and stubbornness. Honor just means self-esteem, self-regard. Let me say it differently. What does it mean to honor yourself? Maybe there are some psychologists that say, what does it mean to honor yourself? We call that self-esteem. We can call that individuality, freedom, your own identity. And this is really the hardest blocker to our listening, because when we listen to something else, a person, an idea, input, basically forfeiting our individuality. It's at some point, can people say, okay, I'm not going to hold to my ideas right now. I'm going to surrender my ideas to those ideas, my ideas to this person, my ideas to this authority. It's really hard. It isn't easy. Chozek lev, triumphant, cocky, egotistic, that's kavod. You want to be mechabit yourself, right? Kavod abrios, kavod atzmi. You want to have kavod. Kavod is nothing wrong. There's nothing toxic with kavod. What happens when kavod stands in the way? Because it just really breaks down. Until now, it's fairly easy to overcome. Try sensitive people. Trying not to be cocky people. Trying not to be preoccupied either logistically, practically, or emotionally. But we have to honor ourselves. We have to have self-esteem. We have to have individuality. But at a certain point, we refuse to listen because we don't want to give ourselves up. So we feel invaded. And then that's, I'm a teacher, so I know this all the time. Kids don't want anyone, don't give themselves up. I have my own individuality. How can I just surrender that to someone else? So these are the three emotional conditions that Paro models for us. Maybe a little more extreme. He's a psychopath. I don't know of any psychopaths out there, but a lot of cognitive dissonance, compartmentalizers, bifurcators. We feel, but limited engagement. A lot of success breeds I know it all, self-arbitration, a lot of preoccupation, well, livers, too much going on, too much emotions, unable to calibrate properly, and then finally the hardest is that we just really honor ourselves as we should and must, but sometimes we have to let go of ourselves. And I think that more or less brings us to the question I said I won't talk about. I'll talk about this in a few moments. How can HaKadosh Baruch Hu do this to Paro? Well, before tonight's shiur, before we deconstructed why Paro didn't listen, it seemed to be a philosophical issue or cognitive. When Paro made a decision, I want to release them. It makes sense for me economically, politically, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu invades his heart from Shemayim and changes his mind. It's a very different story now. The blockers that prevented Paro from coming around, they're part of our emotional mechanisms, our emotional lives, who we are as people. They're our emotional identities. We struggle with these, and we actually don't just struggle with them. We need them. Sometimes we have to be insensitive. It's called courage. Courage means you're not letting fear overcome you. You sense fear, but you're mechazek your heart. I think there's a pasuk in the beginning of the section. Ashrei mefachei tamid u'makshali mipol. So you have to be fearful. Sometimes you have to have a strong heart. Be courageous. Sometimes we need cognitive dissonance because we can't cope. So we have to tell ourselves a story that allows us to live with ourselves. Sometimes we need to be confident in ourselves. Sometimes we need to esteem ourselves and to have self-esteem. So these are the natural emotional systems that are part of our lives and are essential to whom we are as people. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivered to us to give us strength, ability, emotional change. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu can introduce into Paro's world a factor or variable into our world that will augment the challenge to properly calibrate versus shutting down sensitivity, just not feeling certain things is going to be harmful. So there's a normal calibration process and a kind of sparkle can introduce, but that's just an isayon. Hashem isn't taking away our freedom of choice if it, I'm not going to Minyan tomorrow, but let's say I wake up on a regular day and it's raining outside. Hashem isn't removing my freedom of choice to go to Minyan or to perform the mitzvah, Hashem is just challenging me through any sun, introducing variables and making it harder. So human beings are naturally gifted with this emotional world of sensitivity, but oversensitivity will get you. I'm oversensitive further. I know it's one of my primary faults. I sense things too hard, too. I have to get out of it sometimes, but I won't change my sensitivity. I won't give it away for anything. I know that I have to calibrate it better than I do. If to feel some success in life and parlay that success into advancing yourself, but at what point does it become too strong-armed, too cocky, and too self-infatuated? You have to be occupied but preoccupied. You have to esteem. So these are the emotional systems Shem created. Shem doesn't block anything, and then he hurls some factor into Paro's world that makes this calibration more challenging. So there's no stripping of freedom of choice because these are choices that are part of natural emotional calibration. Do I listen? Do I not listen? It could be a little harder to calibrate. Kadosh Baruch Hu moves the needle a little bit, but I still have the right to employ these emotions and make those decisions. But again, it's a really, really long issue, a large issue, and I'm a little bit unfair. Like, just take a little peek inside, open Pandora's box, let all the issues come out, and just provide. But I think it provides a new glance. And certainly, even if it doesn't solve the theological, philosophical issue, it's important because now we know why the Torah spends so much time in the Odyssey of Pyro's heart. Who cares? And so this is an example for us. How do we calibrate our hearts? How do we remove these emotional blockers? How do we move people, events, ideas? How do they move us? How do they change us? Well, it's obvious we have to change. Obviously, there are major events that are compelling us to change. Now, the hard part and the subjective and individual part, now it's on you and every person listening and what their change is and what their assessment is. So being that this share takes place evidently on Wednesday evenings, I imagine this is the last time we'll meet for at least 2 weeks, unless there's some change in schedule. Next week, the Mitzvah will be Leil HaSeder Wednesday night. The week after will be Matzei Yom Tov, Matzei Pesach, and Mitzvah Shem. We should already have good news and deserve Tavos as soon as possible. But if I don't have a chance to speak with this group, so I want to wish you all a chakash v'smach. Most importantly, a healthy and mindful Yom Tov, mindful to whatever public health measures are necessary. It's part of our being Am HaNivchar. Set an example for others. Sadly, not all Jewish communities understood this fast enough. Now, hopefully, we're coming around, but certainly it's Pesach, and we're the Am HaNivchar. So, we're the Am HaNivchar. We take the lead. We have to take the lead in this moment in health consciousness. And I want to wish you all a chakash v'smach and a healthy, healthy, healthy.